Chapter 110. Through the cellars, there's a kind of passage into the back street by which we roll casks in and out. We shall have time to get down there before they can force an entry. Do not delay an instant, but come with me for both our sakes, for mine, my dear good sir. As he spoke, and drew Mr. Airedale back, they had both a glimpse of the street. It was but a glimpse, but it showed them the crowd, gathering, and clustering round the house. Some of the armed men pressing to the front, to break down the doors and windows, some bringing brands from the nearest fire, some with lifted faces following their course upon the roof and pointing them out to their companions. All raging and roaring like the flames they lighted up. They saw some men thirsting for the treasures of strong liquor which they knew were stored within. They saw others, who had been wounded, sinking down into the opposite doorways and dying, solitary wretches, in the midst of all the vast assemblage. Here a frightened woman trying to escape, and there a lost child, and there a drunken ruffian, unconscious of the death wound on his head, raving, and fighting to the last. All these things, and even such trivial incidents as a man with his hat off, or turning round, or stooping down, or shaking hands with another, they marked distinctly, yet in a glance so brief, that, in the act of stepping back, they lost the whole, and saw but the pale faces of each other, and the red sky above them. Mr. Airedale yielded to the entreaties of his companion more, because he was resolved to defend him, than for any thought he had of his own life, or any care he entertained for his own safety, and quickly re-entering the house, they descended the stairs together. Loud blows were thundering on the shutters. Crowbars were already thrust beneath the door, the glass fell from the sashes, a deep light shone through every crevice, and they heard the voices of the foremost in the crowd so close to every chink and keyhole, that they seemed to be hoarsely whispering their threats into their very ears. They had but a moment reached the bottom of the cellar steps, and shut the door behind them, when the mob broke in. The vaults were profoundly dark, and having no torch or candle, for they had been afraid to carry one, lest it should betray their place of refuge, they were obliged to grope with their hands. But they were not long without light, for they had not gone far, when they heard the crowd forcing the door, and, looking back among the low arched passages, could see them in the distance, hurrying to and fro with flashing links, broaching the casks, staving the great vats, turning off upon the right hand and the left, into the different cellars, and lying down to drink at the channels of strong spirits which were already flowing on the ground. They hurried on, not the less quickly for this, and had reached the only vault which lay between them, and the passage out, when suddenly, from the direction in which they were going, a strong light gleamed upon their faces. And before they could slip aside, or turn back, or hide themselves, two men, one bearing a torch, came upon them, and cried in an astonished whisper, "Here they are!" At the same instant they pulled off what they wore upon their heads. Mr. Airedale saw before him Edward Chester, and then saw, when the vintner gasped his name, Joe Willett. The same Joe, though with an arm the less, who used to make the quarterly journey on the gray mare, to pay the bill to the purple-faced vintner, and that very same purple-faced vintner, formerly of Thames Street, now looked him in the face, and challenged him by name. "Give me your hand," said Joe softly, taking it whether the astonished vintner would or no. "Don't fear to shake it. It's a friendly one and a hearty one, though it has no fellow. Why, how well you look, and how bluff you are. And you, God bless you, sir. Take heart. We'll find them. Be of good cheer. We have not been idle." There was something so honest and frank in Joe's speech that Mr. Airedale put his hand in his involuntarily, though their meeting was suspicious enough. But his glance at Edward Chester, and that gentleman's keeping aloof, were not lost upon Joe, who said bluntly, glancing at Edward while he spoke, "Times are changed, Mr. Airedale, and times have come when we ought to know friends from enemies, and make no confusion of names. Let me tell you that, but for this gentleman, you would most likely have been dead by this time, or badly wounded at the best. Apostrophe, what do you say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Airedale. I say, apostrophe, said Joe, first, that it was a bold thing, to be in the crowd at all disguised as one of them, though I won't say much about that, on second thoughts, for that's my case too. Secondly, that it was a brave and glorious action, that's what I call it, to strike that fellow off his horse before their eyes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what fellow? Whose eyes? Apostrophe, what fellow, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Joe. A fellow who has no goodwill to you, and who has the daring and devilry in him of 20 fellows. I know him of old. Once in the house, he would have found you, here or anywhere. The rest owe you no particular grudge, and, unless they see you, will only think of drinking themselves dead. But we lose time. Are you ready? Apostrophe, quite, apostrophe, said Edward. Put out the torch, Joe, and go on. And be silent, there's a good fellow. Apostrophe, silent or not silent, apostrophe, murmured Joe, as he dropped the flaring link upon the ground, crushed it with his foot, and gave his hand to Mr. Airedale. It was a brave and glorious action. No man can alter that. Apostrophe, both Mr. Airedale and the worthy vintner were too amazed, and too much hurried to ask any further questions, so followed their conductors in silence. It seemed, from a short whispering which presently ensued between them, and the vintner relative to the best way of escape, that they had entered by the back door, with the connivance of John Grueby, who watched outside with the key in his pocket, and whom they had taken into their confidence. A party of the crowd coming up that way, just as they entered, John had double-locked the door again, and made off for the soldiers, so that means of retreat was cut off from under them. However, as the front door had been forced, and this minor crowd, being anxious to get at the liquor, had no fancy for losing time in breaking down another, but had gone round, and got in from Holborn with the rest, the narrow lane in the rear was quite free of people. So, when they had crawled through the passage indicated by the vintner, which was a mere shelving trap for the admission of casks, and had managed with some difficulty to unchain and raise the door at the upper end, they emerged into the street without being observed or interrupted. Joe still holding Mr. Airedale tight, and Edward taking the same care of the vintner, they hurried through the streets at a rapid pace, occasionally standing aside to let some fugitives go by, or to keep out of the way of the soldiers who followed them, and whose questions, when they halted to put any, were speedily stopped by one whispered word from Joe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.